Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, it's Gabe time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all of football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the Easy Bake Oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's Gabe time.
Game time. We're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show. 92.9 FM. ESPN.
I still can't believe also Joe Tess in the intro, that's who you hear every day talking about the Easy Bake Oven and my grandfather. He didn't mention Stretch Armstrong either. Stretch Armstrong was another invention.
How dare he?
Of Pops. So that's, I mean, come on, man. Get the whole story straight. You're going to bring, you got to bring the whole thing forward. But welcome in. It's a Monday, June 5th, 2023. And it is time for the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am Gabe Kuhn on Twitter at G_Kuhn71, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman. I'm alongside the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That would be Connor Dunning on Twitter at CDunning929. Connor, hello!
Hello!
You doing well?
I'm doing great.
Yes, good to hear, A lazy weekend, I hear?
Is that lazy.
What it was?
It was fantastic. The sinuses got me this weekend, man.
Okay.
Was like I got hit by a train.
And you told me fiance caught up on all
wife?
Succession.
Wife.
Sorry. I'm speaking about your wife. Your wife caught up on Succession.
She did.
So she can listen to our small talk segments.
We watched 9 episodes of Succession yesterday.
That is a lot.
It was a lot, dude. We started, you know, we were cussing
That's
at each other a lot.
That's 9 hours.
I'm just kidding.
That's
yeah.
9 hours.
Yeah, it was.
You were cussing each other
no,
a lot?
No, I'm just kidding.
You give the Logan Roy F off? F off. That's not how you're supposed
to. No, she loved it, though. It was fantastic.
Well, it's a damn good show. It's over now. I'm still depressed about it, but we have 3 hours of talk outside of Succession Talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. I will open on the weekend that was, the NBA Finals. And there's some NBA coaching notes we have to get into. We've been talking about Joe Mazzulla and what help he may need on his bench. He got it. Sam Cassell on the way to Boston. I don't think that was one of his hires. We talked about it on Friday, but we'll talk about it today, as well as the Heat doing Heat things and tying up the series. Penny was at a golf outing today. And he spoke on basically what's going on this offseason. Said he wasn't worried about what the roster's going to look like going into next year. And then not but 4 hours later, David Jones, St. John's transfer, 13 points per game, around 7 rebounds per game, commits to the University of Memphis. Transfer with a lot of experience and a scoring presence. And that is a massive get while we wait on the DeAndre Williams news. And we'll talk about what could potentially be next. We have Big Three in Dallas talk with the Dallas Mavericks. Kyrie Irving, according to Chris Haynes, according to Shams Charania, is trying to get LeBron out of L.A. I don't know how that's going to work, but apparently that is what we're talking about today instead of the NBA Finals as we normally do. And then as far as guests are concerned, DeMichael Cole will be the only guest today. We'll talk some Grizzlies. We have so many other things to discuss that DeMichael will join at 6. We'll talk NBA Finals, Grizzlies, Ja, the whole nine yards. Then we'll hop into the Blitz after that with Jaron, who was on the Paul George podcast. Great stuff. It's called Playoff P Podcast, right? Playoff P Podcast. And he talked about the Grizzlies being humbled this season. I absolutely agree with him. But will it make them better going into the future? We'll discuss that. Adam Silver was talking to Charles Barkley about the in-season tournament that I still have my doubts about. But he cleared up some things with Charles that I still have my
stuff. Did he?
I mean, he cleared it up. I don't know if it makes it a better idea. You know what I mean? It still seems like it's going to fall on deaf ears for most NBA fans, casual fans, whole nine yards, but we'll talk about it. And also the Bills made a relatively good signing today. An edge rusher, one Leonard Floyd, who's had 9+ sacks the last 3 seasons. They don't want to get caught with an injury to Von Miller like they did last season that really hurt them down the stretch. Now, Heat tie the series, the NBA Finals, at 1-1. Heat are just doing Heat things. They just consistently find a way to get over top. And I know what we talked about Friday. It's all will. It's sheer will that gets them there. But obviously good shooting helps them as well. I thought that last possession there, people are going after Michael Malone for taking no timeout. How do you feel about that? I don't know if I'm really going after him. I thought Jamal Murray got a fine look. Little step back three. He's used to taking those. He's used to hitting those. We saw it in the Lakers series. They just knocked down everything. And Jamal Murray was right there making it happen for them in that series. He just didn't make it happen on that final play. But what do you think about no timeout there? You could have taken a timeout, got your ducks in a row, but I thought ultimately the final shot was fine. Just hit front rim, didn't go in.
Yeah, I thought it was a good shot. You know, it was a frantic last few minutes, and the Nuggets were still in it, and I thought it was a pretty good shot from Jamal Murray. He hits those all the time. Are you going to get a better shot out of a timeout? Maybe, but is it going to be that much better? I don't know.
Yeah, you have to set something up.
Yeah.
And you just have to rely on execution.
If you take a timeout, they know you're taking a three, so
and
it's not like...
You have a one-on-one with Jamal Murray, and right. Jamal Murray is cooked in one-on-ones this entire NBA playoff
yeah,
run.
Yeah, it was a fine shot. Yeah, no,
I
no
thought
problem.
Ultimately it was fine. Now, you can talk about 49% from three. You can talk about all these things. We'll talk about Max Strus and his first quarter and Duncan Robinson going and attacking, getting 10 points in the fourth quarter and getting to the rim. Duncan Robinson finishing with his left at the rim. But I think one of the biggest things that the Heat did last night, and I have been banging this drum for any team playing Nikola Jokic, they turned Nikola Jokic into a scorer. He had 41, 11, and 4. Now, I want to mention this and play this sound. Ramona Shelburne was asking in the postgame presser, Eric Spoelstra, Heat head coach, about, you know, what do you think about Jokic being turned into a scorer? And it was that the plan going in to game two last night? Was that part of the adjustment? Eric Spoelstra says you must have an untrained eye if you think that turning Jokic into a scorer is the only answer. This is Eric Spoelstra after the game.
Final question on the left.
Hey, Coach. Ramona Shelburne, ESPN. This is probably oversimplifying things, but sometimes when teams play against Jokic, you turn him into a scorer, you turn him into a passer, and he controls the game. He only had 4 assists tonight.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. You know, it's just that's the untrained eye that says something like that. This guy's an incredible player. You know, twice in 2 seasons, he's been the best player on this planet. You can't just say, oh, make him a scorer. That's not how they play. They have so many different actions that just get you compromised. We have to focus on what we do. You know, we try to do things the hard way, and he requires you to do many things the hard way. He has our full respect. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Coach.
Now, untrained eye hurts worse than anything you can.
Yeah, brutal. I mean,
good Lord.
Brutal.
Poor Ramona. I felt bad for Ramona.
A little unfair.
That. Yeah, untrained eye, casual's usually the one that people try to throw around, but untrained eye hurts worse, doesn't it? Like, that one just...
feels more pointed.
Ooh, like, that just hits you. It just shakes your bones. Ramona Shelburne's been covering the NBA for how long at this point? I mean, way up over 20, 30 years. Like, she's got somewhat of a trained eye. You can't say she doesn't have any type of basketball knowledge. She's got some.
Do you think that was directed towards her, though, or
I
the idea?
I think that was directed at the idea, yeah. But... you know what? I'll bite, and I'll be an untrained eye here. You know what? I'll go, Eric. I'll be the guy who has an untrained eye because the stats back up that you want to make Nikola Jokic a scorer. And I've been saying it throughout the NBA playoffs. This is not new. If you've been listening to the show, you hear me say this all the time. You don't want him to dish out 10-plus assists because when he does, he kills you and the rest of his team kills you. Now, some people will say it's a no-duh stat, but I don't think it's quite that. The Nuggets this regular season were 34-4 when Joker had 10-plus assists. They were 14-17 when he didn't. That in itself shows you if he's helping his teammates – and not scoring at a high rate, scoring 41 points in a game, they generally win ball games. Also, a couple other things to help lift up the untrained eyes and what we're seeing over there and what's happening in these playoffs and in this NBA Finals. Nikola Jokic, in their losses, in the Nuggets' losses, they haven't had many, and obviously this was their first loss at home, so the Heat did something that no one else could do throughout these playoffs. But in all of the losses so far, in the NBA playoffs for the Nuggets, Nikola Jokic is averaging 42 points per game. That's way above his normal average in the postseason. That would be the second highest all time in losses in general. 41.8 points per game in losses. Also, the Denver Nuggets, and this is probably the one that hits closest to home for me, they've lost 9 straight games when Jokic has fewer than 5 assists. If you turn him into a scorer and you don't let him get his teammates involved enough, you have a chance to win a ball game. You can call it untrained eye all you want. I know there's more that goes into it. You have to throw different looks at him. You have to make it confusing. You have to stick to the guys that are off ball while Jokic has the ball so he cannot get them open. But it's pretty damn clear that making him a full-time 41-point-per-game, 42-point-per-game scorer gives you the best chance to win. And how about this stat as well? People will say, okay, well, they just missed shots last night. Nikola Jokic made 68 passes in Game 2. Only 13 of them led to a shot attempt. That's his lowest amount of the entire playoffs. The Heat did a good job of making sure he couldn't facilitate at a high level. That's why they won the game. They only won by 3, but they still won the game on the road. Hand the Nuggets their first loss on their home floor. Nobody else was able to do that. And it's because, ultimately, they made Nikola Jokic go to the rim and score at a high level. And they didn't let him get his teammates involved. So Eric Spoelstra can call it an untrained eye all he wants, but the stats back it up consistently. Now, can you replicate that night tonight? That's a different conversation altogether. Probably not. Probably not. But at the same time, it gives you your best chance to win, and that's why the Heat ultimately won last night.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's pretty crazy when you're talking about a generational talent like Nikola Jokic, and the goal is to make him be a scorer and not a passer. That just tells you how good he really is at facilitating the basketball and how good he is at having an offense run through him. But I thought last night they had a great game plan, the Miami Heat did. They just stayed in the game. They just stayed in there. They stayed in there. They wouldn't go away. They wouldn't go away. And then when those shots started dropping, you know, it was tough for the Nuggets to recover. It really looked like in the third quarter when Nikola Jokic had a bit of a mini run himself. I'm not sure if you agree with this, but it seemed like to me the rest of the Nuggets kind of relaxed a little bit. And they were like, oh, okay, Jokic is just going to take us home here. When in reality, they needed to step up and be just as intense as they were in the first half when they went on that big run. It just really seemed like that the Nuggets team kind of looked at Jokic and was like, you're going to get us over the hump in this one, right? Because Michael Porter Jr. was just off in that game last night. Jamal Murray wasn't as dominant as he has been. And then really KCP and Michael Porter Jr. were, when they're not playing well, the Nuggets really, really need an offensive output from Jamal Murray. And it just didn't happen last night. And I thought that the Heat deserve a ton of credit for what they did. They just stayed in it. They were warriors. I know Jimmy Butler had a struggling game shooting the basketball. He ended up with 21 points, 7-19. But at one point, I think he was like 3-14. He really struggled. But he was distributing the basketball beautifully last night. He had 9 assists. He kept doing this thing where he would get to the rim, and those little cut passes he would have were perfect yep. every single time. And they were getting those open threes. And that's another thing is, like, I know that the Heat hit 49% of their threes. That's a crazy number.
Yes,
that's
is.
A crazy number. But they were open threes. They
yes.
were open threes. The offense got them those shots. So the Nuggets need to adjust to that to make sure they don't let those open shots happen. So I just thought it was a great game plan from the Heat last night. We talked about there's going to be a game where they're going to drop, where they're just going to hit every single shot, and that was last night. I thought it was
I didn't think it would come after a night where they shot under, or a game where they shot under 30%.
I certainly didn't think it was going to happen in Denver, but it did. And, you know, it was all the credit to the Heat last night. I think that they did more to cause themselves to win than the Nuggets did. You know, I don't like it when people are like, the Nuggets lost the game. It's like, I don't know, the Heat won that game, you know?
Man, they're just so tough.
They're zombies. They won't go away.
They're so tough. Like, there's so many teams. They got up really early. They got up by double digits in the first quarter, and then the Nuggets started making this run. They ended up getting a 15-point lead by midway through the second quarter. How many teams have we seen in these playoffs fold after something like that, where they feel like, oh, damn, everything went right for us, and we're still trying to make it go right. We sit down a couple guys, and everything flips on its head. Some teams can't recover from that, but these Heat recover from everything. They don't care. I don't think the Nuggets really care in the grand scheme. I would not count the Nuggets out from going on the road in Miami and flipping this series back on its head. But this Heat team is just so damn tough. And, I mean, again, 49% from three. The reason the Heat won that game is they just hit shots, man. Max Strus went 0-for-9 in game one from three. He went 4-for-7 from three in the first.
It was amazing. He was pulling.
Duncan Robinson was phenomenal in that fourth quarter, even attacking the rim. He had 10 points in the game. He had 10 points in the fourth quarter. This is a guy who's been buried on the bench buried on the bench, got a 5-year, $90 million deal a couple years ago, gets buried on the bench, and then comes back from the dead in these playoffs and shows his worth when it matters the most. It's the Heat, man. And I saw Gabe Vincent was their leading scorer last night. He had 23 points. Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler, I thought, were aggressive. Bam Adebayo had a really good offensive night. Jimmy Butler offensively, he was just more aggressive. He wasn't great. He was 7-for-19 from the field. But how many teams in the NBA, I really think there's one out of 30, that could replicate Gabe Vincent, 23 points last night, being the leading scorer of an NBA Finals game that they won. A undrafted 26-year-old from UC Santa Barbara who's only started half the games in the regular season this year because Kyle Lowry's either been hurt or he's on his last leg. Like, there's only one team in the NBA that would be able to accomplish what they accomplished last night with Gabe Vincent being the leading scorer. It's ridiculous. It defies logic. It defies sense. But I talked about it on Friday. Everything the Heat have done to this point defies logic and defies sense. It's just who they are. It's ingrained in them that they are. If they lose, they get punched in the mouth. They're going to work harder and they're going to try to come back and get a win.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable when you look at this playoff run from them. Not only are they the 8 seed, but they have won 7 games now, I think, when they've been down by double digits at some point in the playoffs, which is just a crazy number to think about. I think another very important thing that Spoelstra and the Heat did last night was that they started Kevin Love. They gave themselves a little bit extra size to help out with Jokic, and they basically eliminated the switch death match that they were getting into with Jokic, and they were doubling him every single time, making him, you know, either score or make that difficult pass. That's another thing last night, is that when Jokic was passing the basketball, they made it difficult for him. I think that you already said only 13 shots were technically open when he was able to pass the basketball. That's a big deal. And I just thought it was a remarkable game plan from the Miami Heat. They just grinded the Nuggets down. They just grinded them down, and it was a rock fight at the end of it, and it's exactly what Miami wanted, because at the end of the day, if they're going to turn it into a three-point shooting match, I mean, Miami's got the guys right now. They're just hot. It's unbelievable to see Gabe Vincent all of a sudden come up and be like, it's my turn now. I'm going to hit all these threes. It's as if they have the Space Jam basketball in their locker room, and they're just passing it around. Like, Caleb Martin was like, okay, it's your turn, Gabe. Take the ball now.
All, them, took all, the powers. All the talent, they're in Cancun right now. You take their powers away
from
them.
It's almost like when Tyler Hero got hurt. They told him to touch this basketball so that his three-point shooting could transfer to the rest of the team. It has been... It's one of the most fun stories we've had in the NBA in a very long time. I still think, ultimately, the Denver Nuggets are going to bounce back and eventually win this series. But there's a reason that both of us picked the Nuggets to win this in six. It's because this Miami Heat team is truly doing something special. They are the definition of team basketball leading to winning. They're the definition of team defense leading to winning. And, again, we've talked about them already, but I think that Bam Adebayo deserves a ton of credit.
The consistency he's shown with – I mean, his career has been marred with inconsistencies, right, especially in NBA playoff basketball. And so far – through the Eastern Conference Finals and now into the NBA Finals, he's been great. He's been a creator. He's been aggressive. He's playing great defense. He brings everything home for them, right, on the defensive side of the ball. When he's out of the game, the difference is so stark.
Oh, my God.
And I saw people pointing it out, but it should be obvious, right? It should be abs. If Cody Zeller's coming in for Bam Adebayo, they're going to be a worse-off defensive team. I mean, it's just how it's going to be. Cody Zeller, I respect the guy. Been around for a while. You know, like he's, but damn, hear, man, like
here's a hysterical
it's not crazy to see. I saw someone tweeted out last night. Oh, it's crazy to see the difference, the stark contrast between Cody Zeller and Bam Adebayo. It's anything but crazy. It's an All NBA defensive upside guy. That's a guy who's won All NBA defense 4 times over, I believe. Of course, it's going to be that way.
It was my favorite stat from last night is that Zeller played 8 minutes and he was minus 14. It's amazing.
That's all they have, though. I mean, unless you're going to put in Omer Yurtseven, I just don't think it's
Haslam. Do they tap Haslam? Hey, Maggie.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Get in there. Get your old ass in there.
Yeah.
I mean, Kevin Love, though, really was great for them last night. He was getting rebounds. He was in the fold. He was scrappy. He wasn't afraid to take those lumps and to double Jokic every single time they had a chance. He was really key, I think, to their game. Because we've talked about before the series and after game one how the Heat's size is just, it's really difficult to defend Jokic. And I think that they just did it perfectly last night. I mean, Bam deserves a ton of credit. Man, he's putting out so much energy on the defensive end. And he's also kind of pacing their offense right now.
They're single covering Jokic, and if he gets into the paint too deep, they'll try to come and give some help.
Right.
But everybody else is just sticking on their guy around the perimeter, and they're not allowing open threes. That's what they did in game two. Now, going forward, you're going to have to make sure you do something. I would imagine Michael Malone and Nikola Jokic, even with this switch they've made to Kevin Love, the Heat have made to Kevin Love in the starting lineup, there's some adjustments up the sleeve, but that's what it is. It's NBA playoffs, adjustment by adjustment.
One of them is to get Michael Porter Jr. to pass the damn basketball because, geez, how many screenshots do we have today of just wide open guys when he's taking a jumper?
He doesn't.
Yeah.
He had 6 assists, I think, in the closeout game 4 against the Lakers. That doesn't happen with him. He puts up shots. That's what he's there to do, though. And I did hear Michael Malone sort of talking about effort after the game. I feel like that was very pointed at Michael Porter Jr.
Agreed.
That was pointed directly at him. He was sort of pouty there, it seemed, late in the game.
Well, it was interesting that they decided to go with MPJ down the stretch when, it's our guy. It's our guy. I thought Brown should have gotten the run there. He should have gotten the run there. He was more effective in the game. I thought that he was playing better team basketball. He had 11 points in 27 minutes. I thought, he looked pretty good. I think he had better effort.
Michael Malone's robbing him from his legacy series.
He's just driving the price down for the Grizzlies. That's all he's doing.
He's trying to make the legacy series not happen.
Yeah.
And you know what? Bruce Brown's going to make it happen by hook or by crook. We're good here.
Have you noticed this, though, I found very interesting watching the game last night, is that they're both kind of running the same offense. It's kind of these Jokic and Bam are the handoff guy, and Jamal and Jimmy are the pick it up and go, and then guys cut and try to get an open three. It's very interesting that they're running almost the exact same offense, and it's kind of like, which one's going to work best?
And final thing, though, on the Heat and why they were tremendously successful offensively last night compared to game one, they attacked. They were way more aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they attacked Denver right in the teeth of the defense. They had 20 free throw attempts as opposed to 2 in the first game. Like that, 18 free throw attempts will get you over the hump
right.
in a tight game, and it was a tight game. That was a 3-point game when it was all said and done. But this is a fun series, man. I think it'll be back and forth. We'll see what happens from here. Now, on the coaching front, obviously we haven't had any big hires over the weekend, but there's a couple of things worth mentioning. First, I guess we'll start with the Suns since Frank Vogel got hired last Friday. Kevin Young, who was sort of down in the last two finalists for that Suns job. He was already on the bench there with Monty Williams. Kevin Young is going to stay on that staff. And then today I saw David Fizdale is going to be added to that Suns staff. That is, now that I see the staff as a whole, I just put Frank Vogel out of it for a second. I think defensively, again, I've made my intentions, my take known on Frank Vogel taking over that Suns team. I like the thought of let's have the best defense in the NBA and let KD and Book be KD and Book. That's a great thought. But Kevin Young, offensively, that's a great offensive coach. And to keep him on that staff for a fair amount of money, he's going to be one of the highest paid assistants. That's great. And then you bring a wealth of knowledge with David Fizdale. I mean, this staff that the Suns are cooking up is really good, but they have to go all in, right? Like, this is 2 more years uninterrupted of KD. They have to go all in right now to see if they can get over the top and win a championship. They've been close, but with this iteration, they're going to have to get the coaching there over the top. They're still going to have to make some roster moves this offseason, get more depth, get more offensive pieces for that bench. But I love the staff they're putting together.
Yeah, if you're going to justify firing Monty Williams, I think that they're certainly doing it. Frank Vogel, Kevin Young, and David Fizdale are a hell of a trio to have for your coaching staff. I know that Fizdale had a rocky time here in Memphis, but overall, he truly is a tremendous assistant coach. He's a really good players coach. He knows how to deal with guys, and I think that Kevin Durant and Devin Booker are going to like having him in the locker room. He does bring some championship pedigree because of his time with the Miami Heat. One of his struggles in Memphis was that he used that pedigree a little bit too much, and he tried to change the system, and I feel like that's probably not really the way he operates anymore. He probably learned from his time here. I thought he did a tremendous job when he was in Utah helping them make some moves. I mean, the roster that they had this season was fun. They were scrappy. They found some players. They were able to identify talent. I just really enjoy what the Suns are doing. I was really skeptical when they fired Monty Williams about who were they going to be able to find a better replacement. And I think, you know, Frank Vogel on the surface may not be better than Monty, but if you put the three of these guys up against Monty, it's a better staff. It is.
Now, also, Sam Cassell joining the Celtics staff with Joe Mazzulla.
That saw this coming.
That's a Brad Stevens hire.
Yeah.
That's bad. That, to be, and I don't want to go too hard on Joe Mazzulla. I think, you know, a little bit more grace than we've given him would be fair, although he was just not a good coach in NBA playoff basketball this year. I'm going to be honest with you. That's the way I'll put it. But this feels like, for Sam Cassell, more of a babysitting job than it is. This feels like almost, and I tried to liken it to this before the show, and I ran it by you a little bit, but it sort of feels like, and I know Jacques Vaughn was still on the staff with the Nets, it feels like Jacques Vaughn to Steve Nash. It's like, all right, we're going to give this guy a chance, but if it goes south, Sam Cassell, you're stepping right in there. And I think Sam Cassell's overdue for a head coaching gig. I mean, He's been around for a while. He's got a wealth of basketball knowledge. He's been around some good teams. He's been due for a head coaching job.
Yeah, I'm really curious what the discussion was between Brad Stevens and Sam Cassell to bring him in, because it seemed like he was in the running for a few of these head coaching jobs. I think he's a tremendous hire for the Celtics, especially with what they've lost from the bench. They're losing more guys to Ime down in Houston. They've already lost Damon Stoudemire. They lost Will Hardy. Like, it's a big deal.
Doesn't this feel like co-head coaches, though?
So that's exactly what it feels like. I mean, when the season ended, you and I looked at each other and we were like, should they keep Mazzulla? And I think we kind of landed on, I thought they should have fired him, but I also understand you gave him a huge extension.
You can't reasonably fire him.
Right. Give him another shot, but we both thought that this was going to potentially happen, where they're going to bring the coaching in on the bench staff, have a bench coach that is going to technically be, you know, he's going to help run things, is what I'll say. Sam Cassell is someone who, you know, he brings a lot of respect and he brings a ton of NBA experience. And I think he's going to help Joe Mazzulla. He could be, Who knows, he might end up being the saving grace for Mazzulla. Maybe Mazzulla figures it out
now,
from learning from Cassell, but it does kind of feel like a, hey man, this guy's going to probably take over for you in a few
years.
Here's
the issue, though. You do run into some power struggles with situations like this at times. If Brad Stevens was the ultimate, he was the ultimate guy that gave Sam Cassell the check mark, and you have that co-head coaching sort of thought process there, you don't want to step on toes. Sam Cassell can't step on Joe Mazzulla's toes. Joe Mazzulla can't step on Sam Cassell's toes. There's got to be a little bit of understanding of how that relationship's going to work ahead of time. You hope they worked that out beforehand, before making the hire, but you could run into some power struggles within that coaching staff if this is ultimately what I think it is, like how the hire was made.
It seems pretty obvious on the surface. I will say that Sam brings a ton of what Ime had, which is that grit and that no-nonsense type of mentality to the practices and into the team. So I totally understand why they made this move. I think it's a tremendous hire. It's a tremendous hire.
Yes.
And it makes me so much more confident in Joe Mazzulla being the head coach of that team moving forward. It does.
Ultimately you're saying you don't trust Joe Mazzulla. When you say, this gives me more confidence in Joe Mazzulla.
It gives me more confidence in the Boston Celtics.
It gives you, as a coaching staff as a whole, you're saying, well, I have more trust in them. But that is basically saying I don't have much trust in what Joe Mazzulla's cooking up right now. But I do feel like this is, if everything goes south, coach in waiting. There he is. So we'll see. We'll see how it all works out. You got to be careful with having too many cooks in the kitchen, though. But I think they can handle it. I think they can handle it. Now, Penny was at a golf tournament today, and Penny also landed a commitment from St. John's transfer David Jones. I talked about the Heat doing Heat things and winning game two last night. Penny is doing Penny things right now, and we're going to have to talk about him on the other side right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now back to the Gabe Kuhn Show, live from the Service Master by Cornerstone Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
We're on the way to crowning an NBA champion, and FanDuel wants you to be a part of the excitement, because right now new customers can get a no-sweat first bet up to $2,500. That's $2,500. Back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. $2,500, you can't beat that. The FanDuel Sportsbook has great promotions every day. It's a safe and secure app. You get paid instantly, right on time. There's no better place to bet all the finals action than America's number one sportsbook. That's visit FanDuel right now. GabeK, G-A-B-E-K. That's my promo code. And get a no-sweat first bet up to $2,500, $2,500. That's FanDuel.com/GabeK, G-A-B-E-K. FanDuel is the official sports betting partner of the NBA and 92.9 ESPN. You must be 21-plus and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $10 deposit required. Refund issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. If you have a gambling problem, call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Before we hop into Tiger basketball, I do have to – can we get a round of applause queued up here, Connor, for the Memphis Showboats, winners of 5 in a row. 5-3 in the South Division. I saw today Fox Sports, R.J. Young, who covers the USFL very closely and college football, has them rated as number one in his power rankings after 5 straight wins. I do sort of – always fall back on the point that Cole Kelly having to get in there like that over Brady White, you know, that's ultimately, it feels like that's where the season has flipped, but they also, I mean, they have replaced a lot of the guys up front on the offensive line. They've tried different things with the defense, but they've made it happen 5 straight and something to be proud of. It's something to be proud of. I've been impressed with what they've done this week, and it was Kareth White. Kareth White had 24 touches for 126 yards and a TD. I mean, good job. I mean, he's fast too, Kareth White. He gets moving. He gets moving very quickly. But, hey, Showboats doing really well. I did see this stat as well. This is interesting. So North Division, South Division, Showboats are in the South Division. South Division is 13-3 against the North Division through 8 weeks, and not a single team has clinched a playoff spot in the South. So the South is dominating the North if you've been paying attention to what's going on. But this has been fun. This has been fun to watch. The Showboats have it going. Todd Haley has flipped this season on its head. And here we are. Here we are, 5-3. Sitting at 5-3 here in Memphis. Now, Penny has flipped the recruiting calendar, transfer portal, whatever, this offseason on its head. Today gets a commitment around 11 a.m. from David Jones. David Jones is a St. John's transfer, 6'6", 210, 6'6", 13.2 points per game, 7 rebounds per game, right around 2 assists per game. What I'm noticing about everybody that Penny has pulled out of the portal so far this year, Jonathan Pierre, or most everybody, Jonathan Pierre, Caleb Mills, bigger guard, Atiafael Leonard, and now David Jones, he is absolutely latching himself on to versatility on both ends of the floor. David Jones is about as versatile as it gets. 3 or 4 is what he'll play. You can play him as a jumbo wing. You can play him sort of in the high post, short corner, whatever it may be. But he's a double-double guy. I mean, in the Big East this year, he had multiple double-doubles, found a way to get his teammates involved. That's something that I'm kind of excited about with him is I think one of the bigger positives on last year's team was Elijah McCadden. As you saw what he could do later in the season, you could give him the ball. He could go get guys involved. He could get to the rim. He started to shoot a 3-ball a little bit better. I feel like David Jones is a very similar guy. He's just got this wide, versatile skill set, and I think he can give those Elijah McCadden minutes relatively well. And, I mean, we're talking about the Big East. 13.2 points per game, 7 rebounds per game in the Big East. You add some dimensions to this team that you need to have. Now, again, I don't think right now we're looking at any normal point guard, running normal point guard minutes. You don't have that necessarily, that five, that massive big in there. But if you get enough talent, enough guys with versatile talent, this team is right where it needs to be as far as roster is concerned, and especially if you add DeAndre Williams and Malcolm Dandridge. This pickup is massive. Don't let anyone fool you.
It is. This is a massive pickup for all the reasons that you just laid out, and if they can get DeAndre Williams on this team and Malcolm Dandridge, then this is going to be a dangerous team all of a sudden. It's going to be a highly talented team, a veteran-laden team, one that knows how to play winning basketball. What I really like about this pickup today is that he's going to do the dirty work for you. You know, he's going to be able to score inside, and he's also going to do that dirty work. He's going to get those rebounds. He's going to play defense. He's also good at distributing the basketball, like
for
you said.
For a bigger guy,
it's a perfect little fit for what they're needing right now. they got a ton of wings, man. They're long. They got a ton of wings, and they're a long team. They're just missing that one big, but that's where Dandridge could come in.
Let me say this. I don't know. Like, if you had a perfect world, mm-hmm. you'd go get a veteran point guard and a great five.
Sure.
In a perfect world. But compared, you know, looking at what the transfer portal has to offer and what, you know, recruiting and maybe reclassification has to offer, this is about as good as you could do. And I mean it in a good way. This is great. This is a great pickup this late in the game. We're talking about, we're into June now. This guy committed on June 5th, 13 points per game, 7 rebounds per game, 2 assists per game, out of the Big East, has some good experience under his belt. Now, last year he shot about 39% from the field. He's had a season where he shot around 45. You need to get him back up into those numbers. But he could be a nice little focal point helper on offense, and defensively he's long, and he sort of fits the mold of everything that Penny has gotten this offseason. I think defensively this team is set, though.
Yeah.
Defensively this team is going to be so disruptive and so damn athletic compared to the rest of the AAC. When we talk about talent and rosters there at the top, people are going to point to FAU, although the Tigers only took a 1-point loss to FAU last year in the tournament. Obviously, it was Kendrick Davis and DeAndre
Williams. They called a
timeout. Yeah, it is what it is. But this team's right there at the top, either one or two, when we're talking about talent going into next year's AAC season. And that's right where you need to be. And I think, if I'm doing the math correctly, I've asked around Parth Upadhyay, I've asked Jason Munns, I've asked everybody about the scholarship situation. Ryan Forrest, for those who have not caught up on that, he was supposed to be a high school point guard that came in. It looks like he's not going to be a part of the fold anymore. So I think there's 2 more scholarships left. And if everything goes right, it looks like that's going to be DeAndre Williams and Malcolm Dandridge. Now, if that doesn't go right, you have 2 scholarships to use on whoever you need to use them on. But I think that's the overarching plan if you can get that extra year for DeAndre Williams.
Yeah, this conversation that we're having right now and this news is exactly why a week ago we were saying there may be some questions about this roster, but it doesn't mean that you don't believe in Penny and his ability to get things done. Because they, at the end of the day, he is a player getter, and that staff are player getters, and that's exactly what they did. They went out, they identified a problem, they said, okay, we can fill that problem with this pickup, and then you add DeAndre Williams, and then you add Malcolm Dandridge, and let's freaking go. It's going to be a fun team next season if they can get all that stuff done. And it's exactly why you are allowed to ask questions about a roster while also still having belief in that the team can get it done.
Yeah. The whole believing in Penny thing, though, good Lord, man. This guy just does it.
He does it.
He finds a way. It's unbelievable to watch it year after year. And, yeah, I had my questions the past 2 weeks, but a lot of them are being answered as we're moving through these issues in this offseason. DeAndre Williams, if he comes back, your offense is right back, very close to where it was last year. I think your defense takes a step even in the added dimension of the length and disruption this defense could have next year is un-freaking believable. It is insane to think about. The amount of guys that can challenge you at the rim, can take the ball, steal it, go the other way with it. The guys that can finish at the rim on the other end, getting some of those fast break points, the guys that can get out and run. This team's in a decent spot compared to what I thought they were about a week ago. And ultimately, we've seen sort of smoke and like Penny tell people, whether it's national reporters, local reporters, about what may be happening. This David Jones thing was it was quiet.
It was quiet.
Very quiet. Showed up on an official visit late last week. And next thing you know, they finish the deal and get him to commit. And something that is also just so noticeable, if Penny and this staff gets guys on campus, the percentage, I want to go back over the last 2 or 3 years and see of the guys that have come on official visits, how many guys have committed to the University of Memphis. That percentage is very high.
I mean, we've heard
the deal gets closed when they get to the city.
I mean, we've heard people talk about it before, and I still think it matters. One of the reasons the Memphis Tigers hired Penny Hardaway was because he's Penny freaking Hardaway.
Yeah, right.
When his number hits your phone, you stop everything and you answer that phone call. You talk to Penny Hardaway. Players that even have turned down Memphis in the past said, well, when Penny called, we at least answered the phone because he's Penny and he deserves that respect. He carries a lot of respect not only for these players but for their families. He knows how to get guys to the NBA. He's proven that before. If you come to Memphis, you're going to be okay with Penny Hardaway, and I think that that's really starting to be proven. And, I mean, I couldn't imagine being a player and telling Penny no to his face. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
You know how hard that is to do? So, yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all.
The closing ability is just so insane. Like, there's a lot of guys around the country that they'll bring you on to campus. Whether I don't know. It's just anybody. Anybody in the Big East. Let's just say St. John's, Georgetown, whatever it is. They bring you on to campus. You have an official visit. You get maybe one commit out of five. Feels like you bring in guys out of five that come on official visits to the University of Memphis. Penny will get three or four of them. It's insane what is done. And obviously, I think, you know, he takes them to Penny's Nitty Gritty, and he does, like,
he shows
them to town, and they have some fun. And that facility over there, Lori Walton facility, is great.
It's beautiful.
But damn, the closing ability is just, you can't teach that. And Penny ABC. Has that. And Penny has that.
You must
that,
be watching man. Some Glengarry Glen Ross. A, always BBC closing.
My
coffee
gosh.
Is for closers.
But David Jones, St. John's transfer, headed to the University of Memphis. Now we await a decision. I don't know how short term, how long term we should be thinking about a decision. With the NCAA, I would think we'd kick the can down the road a little bit, but we're awaiting DeAndre Williams' extra year of eligibility and then Malcolm Dandridge. And sort of the word there is, if DeAndre can play another year, they want to bring on Malcolm, because I don't know if DeAndre's overly interested in being a full-time five. Like, that's sort of the idea, with those two being somewhat, they've been talked of as a package deal in a lot of ways. But we'll see. I mean, here's the thing, too. The clock does kind of work against you in this regard, because Malcolm has his extra year. If this gets kicked down way late in the offseason and we still don't have any word on DeAndre, I wonder if Malcolm's just going to have to find other things to do. We don't know yet. Well, we'll see how quick the NCAA gets this done, but that could be sort of a hurdle that right. They're going to have to deal with throughout this offseason.
Yeah, and, you know, it does feel like right now at this moment that they're kind of a package deal, and it kind of hinges on DeAndre Williams being able to come back for Malcolm to come back. But to be honest, I would like to see Malcolm come back even if DeAndre can't.
Yeah, because, I mean, also, like, from an options perspective, and listen, we didn't know about David Jones until late last week, right?
That is true.
But, like, Malcolm Dandridge seems like a guy who knows what's expected of him. Granted, you know, the injuries and everything else, only got to play in spurts. We know the whole thing.
He was effective when he would play, though.
But I think with this team, with their lack of front court fives, their big men, I think he's got a place. He's got a place.
I love Malcolm Dandridge, and I've always thought that when he's playing, he's been really good for the Tigers. It's all about if he can stay on the floor and if his body gives him those minutes. And hopefully he will, because I don't know, man. It's kind of like, I think that Malcolm and Alo deserve more credit than they've gotten over the last few years. I really do think that they have brought a grittiness to this team. They've brought heart to this team, and they just don't give up, man. When they're out there, they leave it all out there, and I respect that.
They're still, I mean, also, I think there's a discussion just ultimately, with those two guys in particular, what were the expectations coming in versus what you got? Because I think game to game.
They helped start this whole thing.
I think game to game, you got some good minutes out of those guys. It wouldn't always be the prettiest thing in the world, but what was your expectation of those two guys coming in before we get into what they ultimately were? I think Malcolm played some good minutes. Alo really played some good minutes, saved you in a couple situations.
Absolutely.
Over the years, with some of the defensive plays he was able to make when you were down in ball games. And, I mean, it's about expectation versus reality. I thought the reality was certainly fine for Alo. We could argue about Malcolm, but I think that a lot of that was his body and how it sort of tended to fail him here and there over the years. But hopefully he's getting that thing right. If they get DeAndre Williams back, I'd imagine Malcolm Dandridge would be back. Two more scholarships. You fill out the roster. There you are. Wrap it up, put a bow on it, and we're talking about next season. What's the starting five? How's it looking?
Yeah, so, all of a sudden it's a team that can compete for the AAC title, man.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly. NCAA tournament team if DeAndre Williams can get back on the roster.
100%.
There's no doubt. Now, real quick, a little bit of negative news around the University of Memphis. Kerrick Jackson, baseball coach of 1 year, is already headed off. He's already headed off to Mizzou. That's tough news to take. I got to say, 1 year. 1 year of service never hits right. I think people get offended by that. Oh, is Memphis a stepping stone job? Well, yeah, in a lot of ways it is. It has been with football as well. And I think you have to pour more money into the baseball program to make sure he can keep up year after year what he was able to replicate or do this year. But he goes to Mizzou. He's going back home. I mean, he's from that area. He's from St. Louis. Went to Kirkwood High School right around the corner from me. There's a big Mizzou footprint there. And this is, in a lot of ways, probably a dream job for him. I see some negativity on Kerrick Jackson leaving. But ultimately, this is where we miss empathy in certain situations. I understand he took a job, probably had a multi-year deal. You wanted him to stay at Memphis, especially with how well the turnaround went this year. But think about it in your perspective. If you get a pay raise, more things at your disposal, you get to go to the SEC, and you get to get back home, what would you do? I'd jump in a second. I mean, that's where the empathy needs to come in with this. I see a lot of Memphis fans sort of angry with the situation, and I understand you want success for that program. But for Kerrick Jackson, this was kind of a no-brainer.
Absolutely, especially with the ability to be the first black head coach in the SEC.
Right.
That's such a big deal, man. Congratulations to him. Honestly, my reaction was, damn! Like, that was, when I saw the news, I was like, man, he was a good baseball coach.
But honestly, it was
I'm really happy for him, man.
It
That's great.
Good for you.
Yes.
Man. Like, good for you. I wish you some success. Moving on, now the Tigers are going to have to figure out who they're going to hire going into next year. There's some guys out there. We'll probably talk about it here relatively soon.
If anything, it means that Vici's been making good hires, you know?
Yeah, that was a good hire. There's no doubt about it. And for him to, after 1 year, to be in that SEC footprint as the first black head coach in the SEC baseball's history, come on, man.
Kind of wild to take until 2023.
Well, yeah.
That's a larger conversation.
It's SEC, man. We have these conversations. I mean, it's the footprint and how those schools responded historically. But good for Kerrick Jackson. Off to Mizzou, and we'll see what the Tigers do to replace him. Now, there's a big three being discussed in Dallas.
Oh, God.
For the Mavericks, Kyrie Irving, we know, is there. Luka is there. But apparently Kyrie's been reaching out to one of his former teammates, LeBron James. Does it have any legs to it? We'll discuss when we return on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.